is Southside.
Now, clearly, data protection continues even into the world of 2011 as being a vital and important part of such things. And as a result of that, if you actually wish to find the expertise for working one's way through the joys of data protection, look for a company that's got over 20 years of city and business experience, one of the best-known specialists leading commercial competition and, indeed, IP and IT matters across the UK, and I think we're probably going to say globally as well. We, of course, welcome the legend that is Susan Singleton. Are you there, Susan?
I certainly am, yes.
Wonderful stuff. And Happy New Year, I suppose, as we head into the Chinese New Year, the Year of the Rabbit.
Indeed, Happy New Year.
Brilliant. Let us move on to some of the key things here. First of all, have there been any changes in terms of data protection since last we spoke? Because clearly we've had a change of government. Lots of things have been happening with respect to a whole range of issues. Do data protection laws stay as they are? Have they gotten tighter? What's the situation?
Well, it was last year that they increased the maximum fine from quite a small amount up to what could now be up to £500,000. So that's causing a lot of companies to be a bit more serious about data protection. Previously, they could think, oh, the typical fine is £1,000, couldn't care less really, except for PR issues, so it doesn't really matter. But if you're faced with, you know, £500,000 potential fine, that really does get you interested in making sure you don't breach people's data rights.
That's got to be a good thing from the point of view of obviously your own case in point, because I know that you've been very passionate about the misuse and the way in which information is actually passed on without any consent in any way, shape or form.
That's true. Last week we had European Data Protection Day, in fact, and the Information Commissioner has issued a toolkit for individuals, and that's free of charge if you want it. It's on the ICO's website, ico.gov.uk, and that will help you to make sure you aren't yourself responsible for giving too much away on social networking sites and things like that. And they did find 80% of people are very concerned about protecting their personal information.
I know we've also done pieces with our sister station, Siren 107.3 FM in Lincoln, and indeed beyond, and certainly we can never actually stop from advising students and undergraduates, and indeed tutors and various other folk, that Facebook is not a private matter. I mean, as we've actually heard recently with Twitter and issues with respect to Premiership footballers, you do have to bear in mind these things are going into the public domain.
And you do have to just be aware of what the privacy settings are. I, who am supposedly very internet savvy, I didn't realise on LinkedIn, which is another kind of networking site for businesses, that people could see whose profile you have been on, unless you set your privacy otherwise. So I think it's always worth, you know, maybe just every 6 months having a look at all the sites you use and checking that you've got the privacy settings that you're happy with. And the thing is, it's a very personal matter. Some people are quite happy for lots of information to be out in the public domain and others aren't. So it's up to the individuals also, as well as companies, to make sure that they protect themselves in the best way they can.
Let's consider the case of folk who are actually concerned and perhaps naively have allowed their information to be put into the public domain, or they've allowed, in essence, without necessarily realising it, that when they've actually signed up for a financial agreement or something from that point of view, that their details have actually been passed on, and they're actually faced with issues relating to debts which have been bundled up, passed on to other companies without their actual knowledge, and then they're actually faced with what can only be described as perhaps undue harassment.
Yes, there's quite a lot of this about. There always is in recessions. Companies transfer debts to other organisations. Those organisations pass the debts to somebody else. And there is a right in law, believe it or not, to keep transferring or assigning, as lawyers call it, debts to other companies. So, you know, you could owe money to Company A, and they can't be bothered to recover it, so they transfer it to Company B. You never realise that. Then they transfer it to Company C, and eventually there's some company you've never even heard of coming, knocking on the door or ringing you up again and again and again in what can amount to harassment if those companies aren't careful. And just from the data protection point of view, first of all, it's probably the case that when you signed up to the gas or electricity contract that you have, that in that small print is something which says your debt could be sold on and they can pass your data to another company. And one of the bits of advice from the ICO last week about, and the Information Commissioner about data protection, was read the small print. Though I very much doubt you would have much choice of removing clauses from the terms and conditions with your electricity company, it must be so. But by just getting on to a bit more positive side of it, if your data is being passed to a debt collector and then they are coming after you in a very aggressive way, they may well end up breaching the law. So, you know, there are certain things that can amount to harassment. There was one case involving the gas industry a year or two ago where businesswoman didn't earn any money at all, owe any money at all, and she succeeded in bringing a case against a debt collector for harassment, and the judge was very scathing of the actions taken by the debt collector. I don't really want to over-egg the pudding on this, though, because bailiffs do have a right to be fairly persistent. And if they didn't, they'd never recover the money. So it's a difficult balance to get right.
Agreed. I mean, in terms of that, that whole notion of, I suppose you could almost say it's a breach possibly of human rights in various ways. If somebody is, in a sense, kind of driven to distraction and there is a constant stress of people that they've never heard of before coming on for debts which perhaps they considered long since over and clear from that point of view. In terms of the actual fallback position, I mean, allowing for the balance of justice, etc., would you say it's best to actually go and take an action out against the debt collector, the folk from that point of view, or the original company who actually passed on the debts, etc.?
It's often worth going back to the original company because they've got a business reputation to maintain and they don't want cases against them in the courts. However, in law, the contract has been moved to the new company. So if you were, and it's the new company that is harassing you, so it may, certainly in law, you'd have to go against the new company, but the original one might be able to help out. A lot of these cases, the money may not be owed, and you're bashing your head up against a brick wall to say, I paid it, and you send 20 letters out and they still don't reply. It's a question sometimes of practicalities of getting through to the right person who can just put a stop to it. And then secondly, if you do owe the money, if you get through to the right people, they may well allow stage payments and, you know, more reasonable periods to pay. So I think with all debt issues, the earlier you can speak to someone who is good at helping you to organise your debts, Citizens Advice Bureau and organisations like that, the better, because most companies would rather be paid then you go bankrupt. So it's early action is very much recommended.
It makes perfect business sense as well. I mean, if you're continuing to pay the money, it's infinitely better than if you're not paying anything at all, really.
Yes, that's right. And it's difficult because often these things are passed down to someone quite junior and they are told, this is your job. You ring this person up 20 times a day until you get the money. And we really want to get through to the person at the top of the tree who can take decisions. And you may not get very far just talking to the debt collector. So sometimes keeping copies of letters, writing to senior people does help.
Two four-letter words which can create all manner of wonderful things, data and debt, really. It's an interesting sort of connection from that. Reminder, of course, ico.gov.uk. I think that's going to be a wealth of information there. We will, of course, have this as a podcast so people can play the thing over and over again if they wish. I mean, moving on from that, in terms of the European scenario, are things changing? Are European laws becoming more permeable? Are they permeating in terms of the British culture, or is it still a case of within Britain we have our own unique way of actually operating in these kind of things?
Well, I think a lot of these areas, it is based on European law. We've had an EU data protection law since well before 1998, and that's what, in fact, decides what's in our data protection law. So there are European developments all the time. There are proposals to toughen up data protection for people. So I think it's definitely driven from Europe, a lot of the changes. But it's a very interesting area because it's the internet, really, and the ability of technology to make sure that people's data is available that's caused the big problem. I mean, you've always been able to, for example, view people's back gardens by hiring a plane for the last 100 years, but now you can do it through Google Earth. So, in other words, the ability to look at things is still has always been there, but the technology is making it easier to breach people's privacy rights.
Precisely so, and I won't even begin to go on to folk who don't realise their microphones are open and various other bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But that's a whole new world. Susan, it's been fantastic just getting some initial thoughts from 2011 from your good self. A reminder, of course, the website www.singlelaw.com. That's www.singlelaw.com. We'll provide you with a whole heap of other sort of useful scenarios from that point of view. We've got two final questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us at Southside Broadcasting and Siren FM today?
I certainly have. It's very good to be back.
Well, I was just going to say, and it's fact, it's time we actually set up another live show in the very near future, particularly now that we've actually launched the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, which goes out on Thursdays between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. So hopefully we can look forward to featuring you again probably back end of February, if that's okay.
That would be lovely. Yeah.
Susan Singleton, as ever, we salute you.